next thought until after we get this question, and then we'll go back into your thought waiting on the next one. Okay, caller from the 408 area code, you have a question. Go ahead, introduce yourself, and then ask your question.
Hi, my name is Lyndon, and I was wondering about training of psychiatric service dogs. How long, and what kinds of things does go into training, that sort of thing?
Great question, Lyndon. Yeah. Is it okay if I go ahead and answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, so we have on our website an article called Steps to Become a Service Dog User. And this article kind of goes step by step about what we recommend, how we recommend training your dog to be a psychiatric service dog. So the first thing to do is to talk with your doctor. Make sure your doctor agrees that you have a disability, and talk about the work or tasks that a dog could be trained to do to help you. And during this time, you should also talk with other service dog owners about living with the service dog, you know, what are the good parts about it, what are the bad parts about it, that type of thing. And so once you've kind of decided that, the service dog lifestyle is right for you, we recommend finding a trainer. The trainer does not have to have service dog experience. It is helpful if they have had service dog experience, but trainers that do like advanced obedience, canine good citizen testing, things like that, they are going to have the skills needed to help you train your service dog for public access work and, again, also for work and tasks. We recommend that you have your dog temperament tested, which is basically like a personality test, before you start training your dog as a service dog. And so if you have, let's say you have a pet dog already, you would just, you know, ask the trainer to evaluate your dog. If you don't have a dog yet, then you might talk with breeders. We have a couple articles on our website about under the Getting Started section under resources about how to pick a breed of a service dog and how to pick a breeder. And so you can have the breeder and a trainer help you pick the right prospect for service dog work. And it's important to make sure that you are picking the right dog because, you know, you want to make it as easy as possible for yourself and your dog to make it into service dog status. You want to kind of fall into your dog being a service dog. You don't want to have to force your dog into being a service dog. So starting with a dog that has the right personality is really key for making sure that you're setting yourself up for success. So after that, we recommend that you start with basic obedience, and you do that at home, in parks, in pet stores, hardware stores, anywhere that allows pet dogs. So you're not taking your dog out as a service dog in training at this step. Instead, your service dog is a service dog prospect. And so the service dog prospect has no legal standing. This is just what we recommend. You know, you should train your dog to accept other people, to get used to the sights, sounds, and smells of being out in stores. You know, make sure that your dog is used to people of every color, shape, and size, is friendly with other animals. And then also we recommend keeping a training log starting then with how your dog is doing with their obedience skills, their public access behaviors, their behaviors when they're out in like a pet store or a pet-friendly hardware store or something. And also if your dog is being trained to help with your disability in some way, you should be logging your assistance behaviors that mitigate your disability. So, for example, you know, when I am having a panic attack, I'm calling my dog over, Hestia, my dog over, and giving her rewards, and she's, you know, learning that my panic attacks mean good things for her, so that she will be able to eventually make the connection to be able to, you know, alert me to my panic attacks. So okay. Once your dog is pretty much able to pass the Canine Good Citizen Test, and the Canine Good Citizen Test is a basic behavior test that any pet dog can take, we recommend that your dog be mostly able to pass the test. In other words, you could do the test but with treats, or you could do the test except for there's a 3-minute separation where you have to be apart from the dog. So, you know, those type of things. Your dog should be pretty much able to pass the Canine Good Citizen test before you start using your dog as a service dog in training. And when your service dog is a service dog in training, you need to look to your state laws, because fully trained service dogs are covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, and service dogs in training are covered by some state laws. So you would need to look up your state laws, see if service dogs in training are covered, and more importantly, see if psychiatric service dogs in training are covered, because, you know, you want to make sure that you're abiding by the laws in your state. So okay. Then what you do is we recommend at that point purchasing a vest and training patches and going to all of the different pet-friendly places with the vest on. And once your dog is used to working in the vest and pet-friendly places and can just about pass the Canine Good Citizen, then we recommend starting to take your dog out to no pet places. More difficult environments should be saved for later. The key is to keep it under threshold. You want to work on house training, obedience training, work and task training, and stimulus recovery. In other words, recovering from a scare or something like that. So you keep it under threshold and do that training, with your dog's benefit in mind. So in other words, you aren't going to Target to shop. You go to Target just to work with your dog. Someone else can go with you and do shopping, but you follow that person around and you just work on training your dog. Don't do anything else. Just train your dog while you're in Target. And, that type of thing is really important for service dogs in training, to really get that exposure to these no pet places, but to also have the really important support of their person telling them what to do in all of these places. Mm-hmm. So next, what I recommend doing is, if you live in a state that has service dog and training protection, we recommend that even if you think your dog is ready to be a full service dog, you just spend another few months in training status, because it's really important to make sure that you're both ready for what comes up. I've had situations where I was glad that my dog had in training patches on his vest. Once we were in a post office and Ollie saw a dog outside and barked. And post office people came over to me and said, "We see that he's still in training, so we're not going to kick you out. But, you know, if he does it again, then you'll have to leave." And if he hadn't been in training, we would have just kicked you out completely. So having the in training patches on does give you a little bit more leeway if your dog does something like barks at the store or something. And so the last thing is, once you've mastered public access training and also have mastered work and task training to mitigate your disability, we recommend, and you don't have to, but we recommend taking a public access test and having someone videotape it if possible. PSDP has a public access test on our website. We have a little bit of a different point of view about public access testing than most other organizations that have public access tests. Most other organizations, they have really complicated, detailed tests with a lot of specifics on them, but the dog only has to get an 80% to pass the test. And so we, when designing our service dog public access test, we decided that we wanted to make it the most basic test that every service dog should be able to do. And then we just also decided that since this is a really basic test that every service dog should be able to do, you have to get 100% on the test to pass the test. So that our philosophy is kind of different from other people's philosophy on public access testing. And so you don't have to take a public access test, but the idea is that your dog should be able to perform one. And if you ever have a court case, a video proof of public access testing, or a letter from a trainer that describes how you did on a public access test, could be really helpful in a court.
Okay. How long does it take from beginning to end?
It usually takes about 2 years. 1 to 2 years. If you start with, let's say you start with a retired show dog who's already had some basic obedience training and some, you know, socialization, and maybe he's used to going to hotels and stuff like that and pet-friendly places, it might take you only a year. But if you start with a young puppy, you know, that's 8 weeks old, it's probably going to take you closer to 2 years because you got to get through all those puppy fear stages and teenage stages and everything. So every dog is different, and the key is to tailor the training with professional assistance.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. I'm going to reserve all my comments on that one, and I'm going to say, Virginia, I'm sorry, Veronica, you have touched all those bases. That caller is gone, and now I have another call. Well, I had one. Okay, there you go. I have another caller on. Caller has a question. This caller is in area code 803. Caller, say who you are and state your question, please.
Hi, my name is Amanda, and I have two questions. What kind of expenses can we expect in training and raising a service dog? And what would you do during a difficult access challenge?
Okay, great. Thank you, Amanda. I will start off with the expenses. I have trained completely 2 service dogs myself, and I'm and currently training my third. I did an expenses workup of the first 2 years of training. So that includes the purchase price of the dog, vet care for the dog, food for the dog, treats, toys, training, equipment, all of those things I included. And for both my first and second service dog, it ended up being a little over $5,000, actually $5,200 to be exact. And it was I spent different money in different categories for each dog. My first dog, Sabrina, was a shelter rescue. And so she came with some behavioral issues that were pretty severe and had to be worked on. So while it only cost me $100 to adopt her from the animal shelter, it cost several thousand dollars in training expenses to get over some of those issues that were because of her being a rescue in an animal shelter situation. It was actually about $2,000 in vet bills, which were because of her joint issues and genetically inherited teeth issues. And so my second service dog, Ollie, I bought him from a breeder for $2,500, which is like a lot more. But because he doesn't have any genetic health issues and he didn't have any temperament or personality issues from having a rough start in life, the training expenses were much, much less for that dog. So it varies depending on the person. It varies depending on, you know, the price of the dog, how much training lessons and private support you need, how much they cost in your area. You know, if your dog is sensitive, do they need a more expensive food? All those different things can make it vary. But for me, it's been about $5,200 for both of the first 2 dogs, and that's what I have budgeted for my third dog. We have an article that this is the expenses are detailed in, which is under the resources section under Getting Started. It's called Choosing the Right Dog, and it has a breakdown in that article of the expenses that I incurred training both Sabrina and Ollie. Now, as to the access challenges, we actually have a few articles about that, and so to get to those, go to the resources section and to the one that says public interaction tools. And we have an article on there called How I Handle a Public Access Challenge. And generally, I think it's really important to know in a public access challenge that practice is what's going to really save you. A public access challenge, especially your first year or so that you're partnered with a team, is likely going to be very traumatic for you. For the first couple of years, I would cry after every public access challenge. It was very difficult for me to handle. But what I did when I was having the public access challenge, I smiled, I stayed friendly and polite, I just stated the laws, And then if they didn't believe me, I would offer to call the Department of Justice ADA hotline, the Americans with Disability Act hotline, and let them talk to somebody from that hotline about, you know, that they do have to allow a service dog into the store. It's actually a warm line. It's not a hotline because it's not staffed at all times of the day. And so then if that didn't work, that has always worked for me in the past, but if that didn't work, then what I would do is call the police. And I think it's really important that you know the codes that your police department uses for service dog laws in your state, because most police officers don't know all the laws. So what you want to do when you call the police department is you want to say, you know, the reason you're calling, and then you want to tell them it's, you know, Penal Code 365 or something like that. And then that way the officer on their way over can read up on that penal code and be able to then enforce it once they arrive on scene and help you out. And then I think it is important to realize I've had some people who have wanted to file lawsuits after having a difficult access challenge. If you are eventually allowed access, there's no case, even if they harassed you. But if they deny you access and you do go away because of their denial, then you can sue them. And it's really important when you have an access challenge, if you can, record the access challenge. Use your cell phone to record. Any cell phone can record audio. If you have a smartphone or something, you can record a video as well. And so you want to have that recording of what is going on for two reasons. First is, oftentimes if you start recording, people are going to say, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe this isn't right, and they will actually stop denying you access. The other thing about it is that if you end up then taking this to court, you have proof of exactly what happened. And there have been cases where, you know, they've argued something like there was a case several years back where the restaurant argued that the dog was licking the floor, and so that was their reason for excluding the dog from the restaurant, whereas the handler said the dog was licking his foot, and so it was not a good reason to be excluded from the restaurant. There was no video proof, so, you know, she lost her case. So if you have video proof of how your dog is behaving, how the people are treating you, and what's going on in the access challenge, that's what you should be doing.
Let me jump in on this one. And when you're having an access challenge, make sure you know who you're talking to and make sure it is a manager, supervisor, because an employee will be, you know, punished. But oftentimes when you ask for a manager or you ask for a supervisor, you're going to lessen your problem, lessen your issue. And, you know, make sure you get that hotline and put it in your phone so that it is, you know, already on speed dial so that you can, you know, dial that number right away. The other thing I wanted to say is you asked about training expenses, and understand that most of those training expenses for your service dog are tax deductible. You'll have to look at the tax publication, IRS publication for yourself, but and see the exact writing. But a lot of those are tax deductible. You have to do the math. You have to do all that stuff. But so that helps you, you know, make it within your ability to do money-wise. Caller, do you have a further question or do you have a follow-on question?
No, thank you for explaining that to me.
You're welcome.
And thank you for calling in and thank you for listening. Okay, Veronica?
Yes.
Have no more callers, and I have more time. So if you want to bring up another point, you can.
Okay, well, I guess I was thank you for saying about getting the manager. I just wanted to say one more thing is that, you know, I I think it's really important when you're having a public access challenge is that you do education over litigation, that educating people is really the best way to go about it. You shouldn't be needing to sue people left and right. A lot of times if you're polite, you explain the laws, even like go home, or if you don't have them already printed out like a flyer, go home, print out some flyers and bring them back. Educate people instead of litigating if you can. I think is important. And so people just don't know these laws, so it's important to be understanding, especially when it's a business run by someone who English is not their first language and they might not understand what a service dog is. You want to try to be able to explain to them what a service dog is and how your dog helps you. Everyone probably knows that the people are allowed to ask two questions. Gatekeepers, people who are trying to deny you access, are allowed to ask you two questions. They're allowed to ask you if you have a service dog for your disability, and they can ask you what work or tasks your dog has been trained to do to mitigate your disability. You don't have to tell them what your disability is, but you do have to be able to describe what your dog does to you. So, for example, you might say, my dog is a medical response dog. He responds to my medical condition when I get sick. Or my dog is a medical alert dog. He warns me before I get sick. You know, things like that are acceptable answers. And I think that's about all I had.
Well, that's well and good. And let's see. Let's give a caller one last time. Hey, callers, if you have a question or a comment, or you just want to call in and tell Dr. Morris how interesting and how informative her talk was, you can give a call, 646-668-2499. We'll give you a moment or two to get on the phone, and what you need to do is once you dial that number, press number 1, and I'll be able to see that you want to get in and make a comment or make a question. So we'll give you a moment or two to do that. In the meantime, I am going to share with you that tomorrow's guest will be Stephen Salkin, and he will be talking to us about service dog fitness. That's a very interesting and exciting topic, I believe. And so I wanted to get that word out to you so you can put us on your calendar and let all your friends and neighbors know that All About Service Dogs is going to be on Blog Talk Radio from 8 to 10 o'clock. And the program will flow pretty much like it did tonight. We'll give Steve an opportunity to give his lecture, and then we'll take questions, and we'll just talk a little bit and see if we can get some understanding, and we'll do it like that. And Veronica, nobody is taking us up on any more questions, and I think that's probably because you did a very thorough job, and you put out there everything that needed to be put out there. And let me just remind you, Veronica is going to be putting those links and stuff like that in the comments section for this video, for this show recording. And they'll be in the comment section. We invite your comments. And if you will, go ahead and follow us at Blog Talk Radio, and that way you find all the new shows, who's going to be the speakers, and things like that. And it looks like good for us. Veronica, it looks like I might have a caller that just called back in, so we're going to give them a chance to speak. Caller from 803, you have another question or another comment? Go ahead.
Yes, I have one last question that's a follow-up to what she just explained. when are businesses, when is it appropriate for a business to ask a service dog to leave?
A business can ask a service dog to leave if it is changes the fundamental nature of the business. So, for example, a cat boarding facility is one that I used to go to. So this was a facility where people boarded cats and cats only, and bringing a service dog in, even though my dog would be fine around cats, would be really, really stressful for the cats. So that's one instance that a service dog can be denied access. And the other is if the dog is being disruptive or destructive. So if the dog is biting, barking, growling, pooping, peeing, any of that stuff, then also the dog can be asked to leave. If the dog does bark, you know, some dogs are trained to bark for an alert to their handler. So if the dog barks like once, you know, then they should be giving the person a chance to correct the behavior or take care of whatever their medical condition is. But if the dog is barking repeatedly, then they can ask the dog to leave or require them to leave. It really depends on the context. For example, if you're in a movie theater, a barking dog is going to be a really big issue. If you're out at a like a baseball game and everyone's singing in the seventh inning stretch and your dog howls along because you're singing, that obviously is, you know, not something that probably people are going to feel like it warrants being kicked out, because it's not really affecting the fundamental nature of the business.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'd like to say one more thing.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say one more thing. I forgot. So if you want to know how to help our organization, you can visit our You Can Help page, which is at psychdogpartners.org/can-help. And there are three links on that page. One of them is the donate link. And it, on that page is a link to our PayPal information and also to where you can buy PSDP T-shirts, sweatshirts, polo shirts, patches, and bandanas. There's also a personal impact page, which tells stories of people who have been helped by PSDP, and then also our advocacy campaigns, things we have, advocacy letters we've written. You know, if you want to take do anything with advocacy, that would be the place to visit. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
That's super. I want to take a minute to go back to the last caller's question and just put in one little thought. The question was, what are some reasons, or at what point can a store owner manager have the dog removed? I wanted to say that those points that Veronica gave are good and they're stable. But you need to understand that even if you are at the point to where you need to have the service dog removed, you have to give the handler the opportunity to come back and receive services without the dog once they have removed the dog. So you can't just, you know, ban the dog and the handler. But if the, you know, if the dog needs to be removed, you do have every right and a responsibility, for that matter, to have the dog removed. But you have to offer the handler the opportunity to come back in and receive their services without the dog. So I just
excellent.
Wanted to put that in.
Yeah, excellent point. And that also reminds me that if you're in a public access challenge and you start yelling and screaming and stuff like that, then you are being disruptive and they can ask you to leave. But if you are staying polite, then they have to serve you after the dog has been removed. I just know of some cases where people have legally been allowed to be kicked out because they were yelling and screaming and stuff like that. So stay calm, be nice, be polite, you know, just state the laws.
Very good point, very good point. Some of us are quite obnoxious, and that's not nice. It's not kind. It's not how Mama taught us to be. So we need to be better citizens ourselves. And
that's good.
So a lot of times, and like with the store owner, store manager, whether you choose to litigate or to educate, a lot of that is determined by how you feel they are approaching you. I mean, not too many of us is going to just jump right to litigation to somebody who we feel like they're just trying to do their job. You know, and if they're polite, if they're kind, if they're professional, and they're doing their job, you know, we're not too many of us, not if we're in our right mind, are going to, you know, go off the deep end. But, you know, if they're rude, if they're obnoxious, if they're just being hateful, being bullies, you know, just not wanting to do right, then oftentimes we're like, you know what, normally I'd try to educate you, but you're not ignorant to this. You're just being rude and stupid, and I don't have to take it. Mm-hmm. So I just got a caller in, but I don't see that you pressed number one, so I'm not... Okay, there's your number one. There's the question. Okay. Virginia, I have another question here, so let's see what the caller from area code 619 has. Go ahead and introduce yourself and ask your question.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I was wondering, you've mentioned you've had a couple of different breeds for your service dogs. Are there any type of breeds that are more particularly used, or are there any type of breeds that don't make good service dogs?
Help yourself.
A dog of any breed can be a service dog. There are no restrictions. In fact, the Department of Justice latest interpretation of the ADA specifically says that dogs of any breed, including breeds that are subject to breed-specific legislation like pit bulls, things like that, they are allowed to be service dogs. There are some breeds that are better suited for service work than others. Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers are the most common service dogs for a reason, and that's because they tend to work out well as service dogs. They are easily trainable. They have very forgiving personalities. They like people. They like working for their handler. Standard poodles are also becoming more popular because they don't shed, and they're good for people who have allergies. But you know, it really depends on what you need in a dog. If you are not very active, then an active breed of dog like a lab or a golden or a poodle is not going to work out for you, especially if you are, you know, if you like, let's say, border collies. They can make wonderful service dogs. They are really well suited for it because the herding breeds are very in tune with their handlers, but they require a lot of activity. And so you have to be prepared to do things like do agility classes, play fly ball, herd sheep, things like that with your border collie. And if you're really kind of not doing very much like I am lately, you know, I've become more housebound in the last several years than I was when I got Ollie. And so I needed a dog that, you know, would be less energetic and be able to kind of get by on just one walk a day, you know, kind of leisurely walks, not really doing a lot. So I chose a breed that has really low energy, a Japanese Chin, even though they're not very popular for service work. It's important to set yourself up for success. So look at the breed, what the breed has been bred to do. Huskies have been bred to run all day long. If you are not a runner, then your husky is going to not be happy and is going to be probably destructive or disruptive at home. You know, so that might not be a good choice for you if you aren't a runner. But if you are a runner, maybe a husky would be great. You know, don't choose a breed based on the breed's looks or on your favorite dog or the dog you had as a child or anything like that. A service dog is a piece of medical equipment. It's like a wheelchair. Most people are not going to choose the wheelchair because of its looks. They're going to choose the wheelchair because it fits them the best. It has the functions that they need. It's reliable. You know, it's likely to work for a long time. So those are the types of things that you should be looking for in a service dog breed. And I think it's important also to know that individual dogs within a breed may vary. You might find a really lazy border collie who is really happy to just, you know, go on one 20-minute walk a day, and that would be great. That would be a good dog for someone with low energy requirements. But you, when you're, especially if you're choosing a puppy, you can't count on getting the extra special an unusual one. You have to go by what gives you the best odds. If you're going with an adult dog, then you can pick the dog based on their temperament. You can use a temperament evaluation. We have some on our website. And evaluate that individual dog and find out that maybe that individual dog, even though it's from a breed that normally doesn't produce good service dogs, maybe that individual dog is perfect for service work. Does that help you out?
That does. I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Before you ask that follow-up question, let me jump in here for just a second. What we like to say, even though I'm a person that promotes a specific breed for the specific task that I train for, you don't want to choose a breed so much as choose a dog with certain behaviors and temperaments that you need. And that's pretty much what Dr. Morris was talking about there. So go ahead with your follow-up question.
Veronica, you mentioned going from a poodle to a Japanese chin. Do you find differences between having a larger size dog and a smaller dog? Are you finding benefits between the two?
Yeah, I'm actually really, really loving having a small dog. And the main thing is when I go out with a dog and I start getting anxious, I need to have physical contact with my dog. So I either need a dog that's tall enough for me to pet them while I'm walking, or I need a dog that's small enough that when I'm having those issues, I'm able to pick the dog up and do grounding exercises with the dog as I'm walking along in the store, so I'm not stopping every few seconds to bend down to my dog and stuff like that. So I found it actually really nice to have a small dog to be able to do that. The food bills are much, much less for having a small dog than a large dog. And it's just generally seems a lot easier, to manage having a small dog than a large dog. Also, my chin is a very low energy dog, and Ollie the poodle is very high energy. So, you know, that is also part of it. I think that another thing is fitting on airplanes. I tend to travel a lot to give presentations, and I used to travel a lot to visit family. And Ollie is a 55-pound standard poodle, and he just barely, barely squeezes underneath the seat in front of me in an airplane. It's very difficult for him to fit there, and he's only 55 pounds. So if you fly on airplanes a lot, or if, let's say, you go to crowded cafes or small little stores with teeny tiny little aisles, having a large dog can be quite difficult, whereas with a small dog, you know, you really aren't running into that issue. I could easily fit Hestia underneath the seat in front of me on an airplane. She would have plenty of room. And there are also some drawbacks, though. You know, when you have a small dog, it doesn't look like a stereotypical service dog. It looks like a purse dog, especially if you're living in, like, California or some place where there are a lot of purse dogs. A lot of people, you know, think that, you know, a small dog can't work and a small dog can't be a service dog, so you will get some more issues because of that. But if your dog is acting professionally, then generally you're not going to be given that hard of a time. And then the final point about that is that you have to choose your disability mitigation over appearances of the dog. You know, I think that's just important to remember that just pick the dog that is, you know, going to work best for you and the size that's going to work best for you.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I have another caller that just called in. Caller, I don't have a lot of time, but if you do have a question, then go ahead and press that number 1. So I can see that you have a question. Otherwise, I'll think you just called in to listen to the end of the show. And so I'll give you a few seconds to press number 1 on your keypad on your phone so that I know that you actually have a question. Caller from the 480 area code. Just a little more time. And then I'm going to have to go ahead on because There's no place for dead air on a talk show. Veronica, you are going to make some points on the way out. So go ahead and make some points on the way out. You got about 10 minutes left, so go ahead.
I don't think I have anything else that I really need to discuss. Yeah, I think that we've covered a lot of ground.
Well, me for one, I think this was a very profitable and informative show, and I certainly appreciate you coming on to talk with us and share your group with us, share some of your knowledge with us, share some of your personal experience with us. And I appreciate it. I think the listeners appreciate it. I appreciate your willingness to put the information down so people can actually get to your group. And yes, folks, I do want to say if you are in the mind to do it and you feel like you can support financially, that is, the work that they're doing at Psychiatric Service Dog Partners, I'd say go to that website and do what you can do, because she came out here and she, you know, gave to us, and she didn't ask for a thing. She just said, yeah, I'd like to share. I got somebody in area code 619. If you got a question or a comment to make, please press number one. Please just press number one, and I could get you in these last couple seconds, last couple minutes. But if I don't see number one, I'll think you're just listening to the end of the show. So,
well,
Veronica, I'm guessing that I can. I
why
have two lights
them,
on, but I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I said I have two lights on, but they're not giving me the finger. So I'm guessing
okay.
They do not want to ask a question. They're just wanting to listen. Some folks are shy like that.
In closing, I'd like to also say my YouTube channel is Franco Roni, which is spelled FRANCORONI. And I have lots and lots of personal service dog training videos, including public access tests and videos of conventions and all that kind of stuff. So I just remembered that your listeners might be interested in checking that out as well.
Well, that is super. And I am willing and open to giving anybody a word or two. And I got a couple minutes left of airtime, and I am just as willing to go ahead and put the show to bed and start editing. I will say thank you all for listening, and thank you for sharing with your friends that we are here. Many of us in the service dog community suffer with isolation, and a lot of us think we're alone. So having a talk show like this and some of the others that are on is something that we could connect with, and we could hear from different folks who might have different opinions and different information that we might need and we might want. So I just want to thank you all for listening, and thank you for following, and put your comments under the video. And remember that this is live from 8 to 10, at least 8 to 9, depending on what kind of interaction we get, Monday through Friday here on Blog Talk Radio. And you're looking for All About Service Dogs, hosted by Doc Pencil. It's been a pleasure, and we hope to see you again tomorrow at 8 o'clock, where we will have Stephen Salkin as our guest, talking about service dog fitness. That should be exciting and interesting. So I want to thank y'all. Thank you callers who called in. Thank you listeners. Thank you for sharing this with friends and letting people know, oh, you missed a good one. You're going to have to go listen to the podcast. It is available on podcast right here at Blog Talk Radio. All About Service Dogs. And then pick the date, and that will give you which show you want to see. So having said that, This is Doc Vinsel, and until we meet again on tomorrow, we are signing off. Good night.